This is Digital Story Podcast number 883, February 21st, 2023. Today's theme is 7 Photography Sins to Avoid. I'm Derek Story. One of the things my mom used to say to me as a child was, "Derek, you should know better." Sometimes I did and forgot. Other times, I really didn't know better. But that rebuttal only earned me the following admonishment. There is nothing more frightful than ignorance in action. Life is complicated, but photography isn't. And today I'm going to remind you of 7 things that you probably already know and possibly may have forgotten. I hope you enjoy the show. By the way, that second quote about there's nothing more frightful than ignorance in action is from Goethe. I think it's a great quote. I do. And I sometimes felt unjustifiably labeled with it when I just didn't know something simple as a kid. But as photographers, there are certain things that by now, right, because everyone in this audience has been taking pictures for a bit, that we should know. And what I'm going to do with these 7 photography sins to avoid is that we have 2 types of sins in this podcast, right? We have technical sins, and then we have behavioral sins. Now, I would say that overall, the behavioral sins are more embarrassing, and so I'm going to start out with those. However, I am going to cover a few technical sins as well that we should just know better by now. All right, let's start with the behavioral sins. Rule number 1, don't act innocent when you're not, right? Do not act innocent. If you're going to take a picture of something, then do it. But don't act like you didn't snap the shutter when you really did. That is such a bad look. Because remember, you can always ask for forgiveness when you're confronted with, "Did you just take a picture?" The correct answer is, "I did. Why do you ask?" Now, you say that politely. Don't be a dillweed here, right? Don't put tone in your voice. By the way, that was another thing that I used to get called on as a kid, for having tone in my voice. Do not want that. You want to be very polite. "I did. Why do you ask?" Let the inquirer explain their concern, because a lot of times the concern could be something very simple. You know, we always rush to the worst point in our brain, right? We tell ourselves these stories, you know, that this is a worst case scenario and all that. And sometimes they may be asking so they could have the picture, right? "Can you send me a copy?" could be the next question, instead of, you know, "I want you to erase that right now. How dare you?" All that kind of stuff. Now, I have had both. I have had nice inquiries more often than I've had confrontational ones. So I just keep an open mind. Why do you ask? Find out what their concern is and then address it. Now, I come from the school of photography. I'm a very polite street photographer, and I know that a lot of people say, "Hey, you know, that's just not the way to go," and they cite all the rules about taking pictures in public and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, the way I look at it is, first of all, I don't want to give photographers a bad name. And I don't know if you've ever followed in the wake of a photographer who, you know, misbehaved, then you know what I mean, because then that person you're interacting with who had that previous experience with someone who wasn't very nice or was rude or however that goes down, then right away they're going to assume that you're the same way, right? Photographers are jerks. I don't want to be a photographer that, you know, makes all the photographers that come behind me have to suffer because I had a momentary lapse in my emotional intelligence. So I want to try to represent our craft as well as possible. The second part is, very seldom do I take a picture that is a life or death, I must have this picture situation. Every now and then it happens, but most of the time, you know what? It's just a picture. And if the person is really bugged, I've had shots where, and this is in public, where my main goal wasn't even the person who questioned me about the shot. I was shooting something else and they happened to be in the frame. If they're bugged about the shot or whatever, you know what? I can just erase it right on the camera in front of them. Not a problem. Wait for them to go away as far away as possible and then go back to taking the shot that I wanted in the first place. In other words, if it isn't a big deal, don't make it a big deal. Just be upfront about what you're doing. This one bears repeating. Don't act innocent when you're not. Just be straightforward. Say what you're doing. Answer their questions. And everybody move on. Rule number 2. Don't take pictures when posted signs say no photography allowed. I know this seems like a shocking revelation, but don't do it. You may not understand the reason why photography is not allowed in certain locations, but nobody really cares if you understand or not, honestly. And especially that security guard who caught you on CCD camera, right? He doesn't care at all why you think you should be able to take pictures when the sign says you cannot. Now, if there is something forbidden, right, that you really want to photograph, let's say it's part of a project you're working on, let's say it's part of some reporting that you're doing, let's say that it truly is important, then, you know, you can go through the steps of getting permission. And I understand that that is not fun. I understand that that is not easy. And it's not always fruitful. However, when you do get permission, then you can take your time. You don't have to sneak a shot. You can get the shot that you want, whatever it happens to be. A lot of times, there are buildings that have specific rules about taking shots of that building. I'm in the group where I do not understand why I can't take a shot of the outside of this building. I see no reason. I see it not revealing anything to, you know, our enemies across the water or anything like that. However, there's a rule. Okay, if it's that simple and I really need a shot of that building, then all right, then that security guard should know how to direct me to getting permission so I can get a little stamped something or other and say, hey, here, I have permission, and then take my time and really get a nice shot of that forbidden fruit. If you go ahead and ignore the sign and you get caught, see rule 1. Rule number 3. Do not use a telephoto lens for unauthorized public photography. I love street photography. I really do. But there's an unspoken rule that I'm now going to speak. You need to keep it somewhat fair by using a lens that gives the subject a chance to know that they're being photographed. So standing half a block away with a long telephoto lens, quite honestly, is creepy. All right? Don't be creepy, right? Don't be creepy, because if you get caught being creepy, that is far worse than just having a conversation with a person that's standing 8 feet away from you. You take a picture with your 50 millimeter lens, and then they look at you, and you know what I do? Because a lot of times they won't even come over and talk to me. They'll look at me, I'll smile, give them a thumbs up and say, you know, I'll just say the words, that was a great shot. Most of the time, and when I say most of the time, I mean like 90% of the time, they'll just like, you know, kind of roll their eyes like, what a dork, right? And then they'll go about their business. In other words, they don't really care. They just want to know what happened, right? They just want to know the reality of that moment. When I tell them the reality of that moment, then they just think that I'm, you know, why would you want to take that picture? All right, he's a little weird, but he's harmless. Everyone moves on. If, however, somehow someone catches you using a long telephoto lens shooting, let's say, someone of the fairer sex from a long distance, then that is going to be really hard to explain, because you know what? There's really only one explanation, and that's creepy, right? So then that's when you have a very difficult situation. I say just stay away from it altogether. Once again, if you're confronted after taking a picture, see rule one. All right, now let's jump into a few technical sins to avoid. Now, these aren't nearly as embarrassing, but they can separate the good photographers from the very casual snapshooters. So let's get into them. This is rule number four now. We've moved into technical. Don't let your camera decide what to focus on. Because, you know what? As smart as your camera is, it really isn't very artistic. It's sort of like if you've ever met someone who is school smart, right? Does great in class, but believes that that Nigerian prince really does want to give them a bunch of money, you know what I'm talking about, right? So there's different kinds of smart. So cameras are smart at finding vertical lines, regardless if that's what you want to shoot or not. They love them. It's like a moth to a flame with those vertical lines. You need to intervene if you want some artistry to your images and help your camera focus correctly on the thing that is most interesting in the frame, right? And that's where we have to come in. So having all the squares active on your autofocus and just letting the camera willy-nilly choose what it wants is going to provide some disappointment in your photography life. Whereas if you go to, you know, these days, I've moved to, it's a medium size. Now, I like the cross pattern, you know, where, so it's something like, I think, four squares in each direction across, and maybe it fills in a little square there on the corners. I like something like that that gives me a little bit of wiggle room, but I can direct it using the jog dial or, you know, whatever you have on the back of your camera, the little pad, whatever method you use to move the autofocus point around. So I just move it to the area, you know, where I want that subject to be sharp, and then I let the camera take it from there, okay? But I'm helping it. I'm directing its intelligence. I'm saying, okay, kids, this is what we want over here, and then the camera goes, all right, I'll make it look really good. That's what I'm talking about. So don't let your camera decide what to focus on. You decide what to focus on, and then let the camera make it look good, all right? Rule number four. Rule number five is somewhat related, only in a different kind of area. Don't rely solely on auto exposure. Okay, again, cameras really smart. However, they're not that smart. They're only a little smart, because our cameras today, as sophisticated as they are, will still turn a black anvil into a gray hunk. And they'll make that beautiful white snow a shade of yucky, right? For all their sophistication, they're still going to mess up on certain exposure situations. Now, with mirrorless cameras, there's absolutely no excuse to let this happen, because we have this thing, this beautiful thing called an electronic viewfinder. We love electronic viewfinders for all sorts of reasons, but one of the best, if not the best, is that we get real-time exposure compensation. Now, before, even with a DSLR and then going back further with film cameras, you had to kind of guess, all right, that's a backlit subject. I probably should increase exposure one stop, or should I do two stops? Ooh, I'm not sure. Right? That kind of thing. With an electronic viewfinder and then some easy to manipulate exposure compensation dial, and all of our mirrorless cameras have an easy way to do exposure compensation, you look through the electronic viewfinder and you just rotate that dial until the picture looks the way that you want it. You may not even know if it's a stop and a half, two stops. You know, you can always check the metadata. It will tell you in the viewfinder if you care, but you don't even really need to know. You just need to know that the picture looks good. You have to intervene a little bit. Then, once again, the camera will take it from there and make it beautiful. So it's a partnership. You and your camera are partners. You know, it's like the best partnerships in the world where each are bringing something beautiful to the table. But you have to do your part, okay? So your part in terms of rule number 5 is use that electronic viewfinder, use exposure compensation, and get the shot in the viewfinder. Save your post-production work for making things really cool, not for fixing your shooting errors. Rule number 6. This is one that I see people forget all the time. Don't let lens flare kill your contrast. Now, shooting in the direction of the sun or any bright light source really can lead to intriguing and sometimes artistic images. And a lot of times, though, we're just shooting the shot. Maybe we're not even trying to shoot in the direction of the sun. It's just where the shot is in relationship to where we're standing. And we're going, okay, cool, we got to take the shot from here. And let's say that the sun is up in the sky. Let's say it's 15, 20 degrees up in the sky. So it's not way high, but, you know, it's, in fact, it's low enough to where it may be bouncing contrasting light off the front of your lens. When it does that, what happens is when it shines a bright light source and it's bouncing off the front of your lens, that glary light, that will affect your photo. If you want that photo to have less contrast and less color, then that's fine. Maybe you're doing like a dreamy portrait. Maybe you even adjust the lens so that you get some real lens flare where you're showing some, you know, colors and so forth. However, if you don't want that, let's say you're not doing a dreamy portrait, then you really want to shield the front of your lens from that light that's shining right off of that glary light. Now, this can happen even with a lens hood on. And, you know, lens hoods for wider lenses aren't as deep. Lens hood for a telephoto can be deeper because, well, it's a telephoto. So what I do a lot of times is, first of all, I like to have a lens hood on the lens if possible. Not only does it help reduce glare, but it gives me something to put my hand on because I'll cup my hand over the lens hood. It sort of serves as extending it. And I can see through the viewfinder if I'm getting part of my hand in the frame, and I actually do pay attention to that, right? So, and then it's really fascinating because when you're in a flare situation and you do that, you take your hand off and you go, ooh, put your hand on and get it positioned right. They go, oh, you know, that kind of thing. It makes a big difference. And sometimes you're giving up contrast and you're giving up color when you don't need to. It's just a matter of protecting the front of that lens from stray light hitting it. So rule number 6, don't let lens flare kill your contrast. All right, and then finally, rule number 7 here, and this is a post-production rule. Don't over-sharpen in post-production. I don't know why so many photographers have this weird obsession with ultra-sharp images that suffer also from too much clarity and, just for kicks, sometimes too much dehazing as well. Honestly, if you want your final picture to look like it was captured with a 2003 digital camera, then just be heavy-handed with the sharpening, with the haze reduction, with the clarity or definition, whatever it's called in your application, and you can take it all the way back to 2003, no problem, and get that really good digital look. I think, generally speaking, what most of us are after is something that's photographic. And when I mean photographic, it has nice tonality, has graduation of tones from another. The sharpness is equivalent with the mood of the shot. Some shots need to be sharper than others, right? And some shots need not to be as sharp as others. Portraits are an example. In portraits, We do want the eyes sharp or at least clear, but we don't need every wrinkle on the skin to be brought out with moving the definition slider all the way to the right, right? Oh, please don't do that to either him or her. And I think what happens is we start playing with a shot and we move the slider and we play the shot and we move the slider more. You know, it's 11 o'clock at night. We have another Coke Zero. All right, now we got more caffeine. Let's move that slider even more. I don't think it's sharp enough. Oh, that's fine. But at some point, don't publish that shot. Let the caffeine go out of your system, get some sleep, and then look at the shot the next morning before you do anything with it. Because there's a good chance the more Coke Zeros you've had, the sharper the image is. And when I mean sharp, I don't mean good sharp. I mean bad sharp. So you just have to know when to say when. Don't over-sharpen in post-production. Rule one, don't act innocent when you're not. Rule two, don't take pictures when posted signs say no photography allowed. Rule three, do not use a telephoto for unauthorized public photography. Rule number four, don't let your camera decide what to focus on. Rule number five, don't rely solely on auto exposure. Rule number six, don't let lens flare kill your contrast. And rule number seven, don't over-sharpen in post-production. So now we can't use the ignorance excuse any longer. Meta will start charging $12 a month for verification on Instagram and also Facebook, right? Okay, so it's going to be both, but I'm just reading the headline straight. This is from Petapixel. I have the link in the show notes so you can read the entire article. Mark Zuckerberg's Meta is taking a page out of Elon Musk's Twitter playbook and will roll out paid verification to both Instagram and Facebook starting this week. Announced first via Zuckerberg's Instagram broadcast channel this morning, the new program called Meta Verified will allow users to verify their account with a government-issued ID and get a blue badge in exchange for $11.99 a month if purchased on the web, or $14.99 if bought through iOS. Zuckerberg positions it as extra impersonation protection against accounts claiming to be other accounts and will also allow those who pay for the subscription to get direct access to customer support. Quote, long term, we want to build a subscription offering that's valuable to everyone, including creators, businesses, and our community at large, Meta adds. As part of this vision, we are evolving the meaning of the verified badge so we can expand access to verification and more people can trust the accounts they interact with are authentic. Those who pay for verification will also receive increased visibility and reach in areas like search, comments, and recommendations. Subscriptions will include proactive monitoring for account impersonation. The company also promises more exclusive features, but did not elaborate. So I would say if you use an iPhone, don't buy it on your iPhone. Go to the web and buy it and then, you know, use it on your iPhone. Because, I mean, that's a big difference per month, $3 a difference per month. And then second of all, that's a lot of change per month. I mean, that's $14.99. I think that's how much my Netflix costs per month. And I get a lot of entertainment out of that I enjoy. So that's interesting to me. And then the second thing is, you know, the rule had kind of been that, okay, if you're not paying for the service, if you're not paying for Facebook, if you're not paying for Instagram, then we have to suffer through all the ads and all the other wonky things that they do to us because we're not paying for it. So my question is, then if you start paying for it, are you spared all those wonky things that we have to endure, those crazy ads and all that stuff, right? Because we're now paying for it and we should just get a much pure, cleaner product. I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect that They're going to say, no, you are paying for verification and a few other goodies, but you still get all the other stuff that we've been doing all along. So I think that's all well and fine, but honestly, it's not for me, and it's certainly not for me at $14.99 a month. I think if anything, if I was going to spend that per month, I would renew my Disney Plus subscription instead of paying for this. Why you should try editing your photos in reverse. You can read this entire article on fstoppers.com. I have a link in the show notes. It sounds like a strange concept, but the reasoning behind it is sound, and it is a straightforward and easy thing to do. This excellent video tutorial, and that's what's featured in this article, will show you how to edit your photos in reverse and why it will help you make better and more precise photos. Coming to you from Anthony Morganti, this great video tutorial will show you the ins and outs of editing your photos in reverse. If you work in Lightroom or any program with similar layout, you'll probably start with the basic global adjustments like exposure, highlight, shadows, etc., and then move on to more local adjustments. And while this works fine for a lot of photos, if you're anyone like me, you probably notice that often once you make some of the local adjustments later on in the process, right, you have to go back and refine the global adjustments because they throw the overall image out of balance. Morganti's method of starting with local adjustments put them in balance first, so when you make the global adjustments, you maintain the relationships between the different elements, reducing your workload and making the edits easier. Check out the video and give it a try. So this is actually kind of interesting to me. Now, I'm not a big local adjustments guy, but, you know, like everyone else, sometimes I have to. Next time that I have a handful of images that I know are going to require some local adjustments, I'm going to do those first, just for giggles, and then try working backwards and see what I think of this workflow. There is a certain amount of logic to this. Now, I try it and go, okay, that was fun. Now I'm going back to the way I normally edit. But I do think it's neat. And how often do we really get a fresh idea when it comes to image editing workflow? Not very often. By the way, Anthony Morganti he does cool videos. I like his stuff. And those of you that have seen them, you know what I mean. This one's a pretty interesting idea, and I just wanted to share it with you. Okay, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community, this podcast, month in and month out. They have an exclusive Inner Circle space on our Derek Story Online. This is where we do photo challenges, we share ideas, and just hang out with one another. And as I've mentioned in previous podcasts, it has turned out to be a very enjoyable place to hang out. And there are no ads and no weird stuff going on there, just pure photography goodness, which is one of the things I like about it. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, joining our Inner Circle group, and supporting the efforts of this podcast in this community, then all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look at our site, see what you think, and hopefully you will join us in 2023. The Nimble Photographer newsletter is published every Thursday, and it gives me an opportunity to cover news and topics that might not make it into the podcast or that happen after I record the podcast. Just like the podcast, the newsletter is free. It will cost you nothing. And all you have to do to subscribe is just go to thenimblephotographer.com. You'll see a link to the newsletter at the top of the page. Click on it, and you too can receive this wonderful but free publication every Thursday in your inbox. I want to give a thank you to those of you who have posted reviews on the Apple Podcasts page for the Digital Story. I went through and checked them again last week, And I saw that we had a handful of new ones. And that is exactly what we needed. That is exactly what we needed. Because now, you know, it had been over a year since the last review. Now we have a handful of fresh ones. So if someone wants to see what's going on with the podcast, not only do they have one new one or two new ones or three new ones, they have like four or five new ones thanks to you, thanks to our listeners. So those of you that took the time to do that, heartfelt thanks. I truly appreciate it. It just helps keep that page nice and fresh. We are alive and vibrant and having fun, and we want to make sure that potential listeners understand that and just don't think that this is some, you know, thing that's been going on for a long time, but nothing new has happened. That ain't the case with us. Thank you so much, those of you who posted reviews. And if you're so moved, we can always use more, right? No need to stop now. You can keep them going. So if you want to share the goodness with potential podcast listeners, I appreciate it so much. And that's not only for the Apple Podcast page, but that's wherever this podcast is streamed. If you use a different service and they allow reviews, boy, that would be so sweet if you do that. And thanks to everyone who has taken the time to help us out. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. These are the folks that help us turn our images, our digital shots, you know, what we've been talking about today, those files, those zeros and ones, into true artwork. To true artwork. Artwork in the classic sense of artwork, where you can look at it and touch it and feel it, and it has texture and light bounces off it, and you can hand it to somebody and they can put it in a frame, and they can put the frame on the wall, or they can, you know, receive a card in an envelope that also feels really good. I mean, it just takes our digital work, our work that we work so hard on, and it just takes it to a new place. And they're here to help us do that, to turn our zeros and ones into something beautiful that you can hand to another person and enjoy its texture and its beauty in a very physical way. Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. They have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. So get out there, take some pictures. Don't forget the rules. Have some fun. I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.